And just so you know, that MLB game was the Angels and Rockies, 25-1.
Oh, yeah, and I'm going to come back to that.
Brutal. Because,
yes, Rockies got whomped. Even though they ended up winning the series, they got killed on point differential.
Yeah.
But, yes, our fearless captain, Jordan Staal. Here's an interesting question. Which Staal places higher in, like, the Kaniac pantheon of players, right?
Oh, well, now it's definitely Jordan.
Jordan's
sure.
Yeah. Eric has a cup.
I know.
Eric, I believe, was Rookie of the Year, right?
Yeah. So
Rookie of the Year, had a cup. Jordan's got more years with us now, but I'm just saying, it's like, you forget the years where Eric Staal was the show in town.
If he gets a cup, then for sure.
It's and he was a hot Jordan. Rookie on a World Cup. I think he was a rookie on a Stanley Cup team. But Jordan Staal signs a 4-year contract worth $11.6 million. Let's let somebody who knows more about hockey than I, Bob McKenzie, telling you what the deal was.
Jordan Staal has signed a 4-year, $11.6 million extension to remain with the Carolina Hurricanes. The 34-year-old was set to become an unrestricted free agent July 1st. Staal's new contract carries a full no move for the first 3 years and full no trade clause for the final season.
Yeah, that's right. No, he ain't going nowhere. A no movement clause for 3 seasons, then a no trade clause for the final season, 26-27. Now, I thought it was obvious that this would be his final contract, but he's only 34. You got Brent Burns out there skating at 40. We'll get to Jordan Staal on that in just a second. I'm not smart enough to break down hockey for you, but I have started to learn some of the beauty of Jordan Staal. Specifically, this always comes up in the playoffs. When home ice advantage matters, one of the things that it matters is you have the ability to dictate matchups more, right? And basically what Jordan Staal does is he makes life very, 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 very difficult for the other team's best scorer. He's a great face-off guy, and the more you have the puck, the more you can do with it, the more the other team doesn't have the puck, the things they can't do with it. And he's always the guy who, if... You know, when we ask the robot overlords to write our sports stories now, they'll be like, Jordan Staal did not score any goals. And so it's like, oh, Jordan Staal doesn't score a lot. He's not worth anything. And every teammate and coach will be like, Jordan Staal might be our most important player. I mean, not really. You obviously do got to score goals, but he just does so many contributing things that contribute to winning hockey. That he is one of the most important players that the Canes have. And he's just been, like, rock solid.
He has.
He's missed some time, but I don't remember him missing any playoff time.
Yeah. You can just tell he's a good leader. He's just a good guy to lean on.
And obviously, if you look the relationship between, I think he's been a captain mostly the entire time that Rod Brind'Amour has been there. And that relationship has worked well. Of, like, how to disseminate the Brind'Amour culture within the Canes. Jordan Staal as the conduit, as the captain, obviously exactly what the team needs and wants because it's been 5 successful seasons now. I like to make sure people know this, not just getting to the playoffs, getting out of the first round every single time.
Yep.
That is big.
It's huge.
Eventually it'll break. They'll win a Stanley Cup. Let's hear from Jordan Staal, who took some time out of his Sunday to hop on a Zoom. He was asked about his initial reaction to this new contract.
Yeah, obviously, it's where I wanted to be. I feel like we've got some unfinished business, and I'm just super excited to be part of the organization and this group of guys, and just everything about it just fit exactly what I wanted to finish off my career with. So I'm excited about it, and it's gonna be a lot of fun and a lot of good future memories.
And hopefully a Stanley Cup. I would have liked to promise a Stanley Cup. That's not really Jordan Staal's style, but, no. You know, whatever. It would have been
optimistic,
cool.
Though.
All right. As I said, when I heard he announced a 4-year deal, I was writing down notes. Right? You like this? I'm preparing for the show, Victoria.
Yeah.
I'm on the Google Doc writing.
Yep.
And I'm writing, Jordan Staal signs 4-year deal that will likely take him to the end of his career. And then I went and looked up his age, and I was like, well, maybe not.
I know.
Maybe not. I can see
like
him going 4 years and then start doing some 1-year deals after that.
Yeah.
He was asked about how he envisioned, if he envisions this as his last contract, talking to his family about that very subject.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys that keep playing after this contract, but we'll see when we get to the end of it. But obviously, you know, it's until the end of my career. But yeah, I'm ready to grind. I'm ready to play, and I feel really good about my game, and I feel like I can help the team for the rest of this contract, and I'm going to do my best to my abilities. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but I believe I can do it. So I'm excited about the deal and where this team's headed in the direction. And I'm just happy to be a part of it.
So there is obviously something about physical breakdown, right? But that's, I'm not being mean.
No, that's age. It's just life.
That's begun for for a dude after 31. Maybe
I'm trying to think,
that's begun. And so the question becomes, and then we talked about Brent Burns specifically. He's pushing 40 now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's definitely late 30s.
He's
not 40. And we've seen other players. I mean, obviously Tom Brady recently was playing football at 45. Yeah. There is a physical aspect of it.
It's a very physical sport.
But there's also things that knowledge, experience you accrue can, knowing when you know the bounce off the boards of every single inch of PNC Arena, yeah, then that makes up for maybe a tenth of a second of skate speed, right? Like, you can balance these things out. To me, it really does come down to more mentally. I've heard interviews with athletes and retired athletes and the different, the guys that as soon as the season's done or as soon as they take their week vacation, all of a sudden they're still fired up to begin that workout program in freaking July or whatever it is. And that first time that you're like, I knew I needed to start my workout program, and I was like, man, I'd rather just play another round of golf. Then you're like, that's it. That's how you knew it was done. So that time, thankfully, has not come for Jordan Staal. And unfortunately, there will come a time when he'll be done. He was asked specifically about whether or not he thought about retiring after this past season.
Yeah, I think, I mean, at the end of the year before, I guess you guys asked that question. And my whole, thought process in my brain for when I signed that 11 years in Carolina was, like I said, I wanted to finish that contract and still finish playing well and playing hard, and then obviously see what happens after that. And so I never really thought much of it. But once it was done, obviously, the way it ended too, and the way I was playing, I felt like I could still contribute to the group and really help a really good team win a cup. So I wanted to keep going. And I'm ready for it. My family's ready for it. We love Carolina. My kids love it there. And it's just been such a blessing to be a part of such a great organization for so long. And just happy to be still kicking the can and giving another another take at trying to get another run here.
The other thing that Jordan Staal is doing here that he doesn't really know he's doing, and I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's not quite the same, but the Canes almost are this becoming this Green Bay Packers type franchise where these guys growing up wanted to play in Toronto and Boston and New York and Chicago, maybe Pittsburgh, right?
Right.
Those are where they saw stars play, or any of the Canadian teams, Edmonton, that's where a lot of these guys saw things play. And so I think, people say, why would you ever want to play in Raleigh, North Carolina, right? But when you start seeing dudes that are well-respected and they've played in a lot of places and won a lot of places, like Justin Williams, mm-hmm, who's actually I'd like to end my career in Carolina, or Jordan Staal, who's going to end up spending so many years here and basically probably not even look that hard to go somewhere else, right? I'm not saying he took a hometown deal. I can't evaluate this contract on money terms. I'll let Adam Gold do that for you. I don't think he's looking that hard. Rod Brindamore, same way.
Yeah.
We almost laugh. I'm not saying that Rod Brindamore, especially if he were able to, give Carolina a cup and feel like he maybe was closing a chapter, and then the bright lights of Toronto or some, glitzy franchise, the New York Rangers, maybe would attract him. But him being a well-respected, well-regarded coach that kind of is like, I don't really want to play anywhere else except here.
Right.
Guys like Jordan Staal, that makes it more likely that guys like Brent Burns,
yeah,
who are like, you know what, I don't want to deal with any of the BS. I want to go to a well-run organization that's also probably doing well and going to get me to the playoffs. Where's a good place I can do that? And then if you throw in things that...
The best fans.
Well, yes. I think that stadium. Matters. Yep. Passionate. Yeah. But also, I was going to say things like things that players like
barbecue.
Golf courses that are close by. You could be in nature,
mountains one direction, beach the other.
You can buy, I think a lot of these, like Brent Burns doesn't want, I guess some mountains, but he wants like space where no one else is.
Yeah.
You can find that, not far.
Somewhere.
Not much left in Wake County. So,
yeah.
We will talk to either Tripp Tracy or Mike Maniscalco, or maybe both.
Yeah.
In the next couple days, we got the NHL draft. So we will invite those guys by to break down not only the draft, but Jordan Staal's new contract and what it means for the Canes. Obviously, just a huge win for Canes organization. Staal, also a guy who, brings no drama, doesn't care.
No.
If he's a first line, second line, third line, he's like, whatever, put
I'm
me
down.
With whoever and we'll make stuff happen. Interestingly enough, there was other Canes transactional news this weekend about a player that people like to talk about a lot.
A very familiar name.
Tony DeAngelo, it was reported, was going to be traded back to the Canes from the Flyers. But then things got a little hairy. Things got held up. And it has nothing to do with Tony DeAngelo being kind of a somewhat controversial figure. Nobody ever asks my take on these things, but here's how I feel about Tony DeAngelo. He said some stupid, ignorant, ugly, vile things, I think, as a kid, right? I think he was a teenager. And he should be punished for those, and those are wrong, and everyone can condemn the things he said. You can read about it if you want. Then one time, he punched a teammate. That's an awful thing. And I think he's been punished fairly severely. If you go look at like what money Tony DeAngelo was making, he lost a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, when you go look at how we punish people in society, like, yeah, we send some people to jail, but like paying millions of dollars is a pretty big punishment for a decent amount of people, right? So I tend to see Tony, and the time that since he signed with the Carolina Hurricanes, I'm not saying I've paid close attention, but I feel like I would have heard about him doing something bad or ugly other than having espousing political views that you or I may not agree with, right? And so I've moved past Tony DeAngelo's past and am now judging him merely on his present. And it seems like the Carolina Hurricanes are too, especially. And I know this isn't the right way to think about it, but also it's sports, especially when they think they can get a pretty good deal on him. So the first time they signed him for the Rangers, they signed him at a pretty cheap deal because he needed to repair his image and get back in the league, and he was looking for any place he could do it. So they got good value out of him. I think he's kind of talked about as not a great defender, and maybe it was helped by the fact that I think he was playing with Jacob Slavin, but he did a pretty good job of quarterbacking a power play. And I think that's what the Carolina Hurricanes want. Carolina Hurricanes might also say, yes, we see he was not great in Philadelphia last year, but we know what he is. And we think in our system, he can serve a certain purpose. And I respect the people making those decisions to see that. However, the league has stepped in and said, hold on a second here. Not so fast. Because what happened is, we trade DeAngelo to the Flyers. They sign him to a deal. Then they were going to send him back to us, and they were retaining a bunch of his salary. And basically, we've seen this now in the Dundon era, and Dundon will probably give more credit to Waddell, but like Dundon's the owner. A lot of the Hurricanes' moves work out.
Yeah.
Now, the Kokkinen-Yemi one, maybe it'll take a little more time. Maybe he would still be seen as maybe not quite worth the contract we're paying him. But it was one of those things where we knew we were going to have to overpay a little bit. And long term, we'll see what the Kokkinen-Yemi 6-year run with the Canes looks like and how much we paid him and what it was worth, right? But we tend to, like, we'll trade nothingness and we'll get a guy who's then all of a sudden, like, contributing for us. Like, we see him do pretty well. And so it's going so well that the NHL is like, hold on.
Wait a minute.
I think you guys are too good at trading. So DeAngelo was meant to go to Carolina with the Flyers retaining some of his salary. But since his trade from the Hurricanes was less than a year ago, it raised some red flags. Pierre LeBrun at The Athletic explained that this is not a regular situation. The Hurricanes traded him as a restricted free agent, meaning that the Canes didn't sign his contract. And Daniel Briere, the Flyers GM, wasn't in place yet when Philadelphia signed him to a deal. So I don't think that anybody's doing anything officially shady. It sounds like they're going to sit down and talk, and the league is either going to say, yeah, you can do it or you can't. But interesting situation nonetheless. I'd like to see, like, when they sit down to talk, I want the league to be there, and I want it to be like a face-off. Like,
yeah.
the owners or whoever have to, like, sit in a scrum and be like, yeah. All right, what do you trade? What do you trade?
What do you trade?
So those are the reports. And, again, we do have the NHL draft this week, so that's why a lot of transactions will be happening now. Next up, getting out the gate. We mentioned it already. LSU won the first game. Florida put up 24 runs last night, so we get the championship game tonight. The guy pitching for LSU is like the best pitcher in college baseball, but he's pitching for the third time in 9 days. I love how, you know, like in the pros, like if we signed some dude to a $100 million contract, or that's probably not even a lot these days, to a $500 million contract because he's so good, like, we count his pitches very, very carefully. And he throws like 70 and we're like, oh, you're done. You're done.
Right.
If he's like striking out everyone, we got a no-hitter, perfect game on that. Nope. In college, we don't give a crap.
Nope.
We roll those dudes back up there. We're like, take six Advil, ice it up, and let's go. Throw,
right.
Buddy, throw.
Rub some dirt on it. Go out.
That's what they do. So the LSU guy is, I think LSU's a slight favorite because he's supposed to shut him down. But I don't know. Well, it's crazy that LSU played a game through 10 innings that was 0-0 against Wake Forest, and then they play a game with 24 runs. Guess it matters who's pitching. And next up, getting out the gate, the Travelers Championship. Yes, that's what it's come to. We're breaking down the travel. I'm trying to stay true to the Gold Show.
Sure.
Talking baseball, hockey, and golf.
There.
I mean, that is the essence of the Adam Gold Show. That's what we're doing here. The Travelers Championship, which is a noted, respected, well-attended, like a lot of the top pros play it, PGA Tour stop, right? It has been maybe one of the poster boys for the, has the game gotten too easy for the good people? And should they be, like, playing with a restricted ball? Because it just looks like they're playing video game golf. They're just driving at 400 yards, then, like, dropping the ball with a wedge 10 feet from the hole and then making the putt. Not just the winner, everyone's doing it. Like, you look at, Keegan Bradley won, and he got, it only became interesting because he fell apart and shot a 68, right? And he still won by three strokes. Ricky Fowler had a 60 at one point, could have had a 59. You don't see a lot of those. I'm not saying that we need to restrict the ball. I don't know. I just feel like maybe there's other ways we can make the game harder. Could we put, like, putt-putt elements on the green? It's like you hit the green, but oh, sorry, you're behind the windmill. So this birdie putt's not going to be as easy as you think. I don't know what. Keegan Bradley, by the way, he set a 54-hole record at the Travelers Championship. And it was kind of cool because he's from the Northeast and this tournament is from the Northeast. So apparently a bunch of Northeast bros went off. It felt like Webb Simpson winning the Wyndham, right? Winning in North Carolina. That was Keegan Bradley. You know, their states aren't as big up there. So even though he's from Vermont, winning a tournament in Connecticut, that's a big deal. Down here, we have bigger states. We don't really know what that's like. So, but Keegan Bradley reminded me of my good friend Josh Goodson, who joined us on Friday and will probably stop by again. Josh, in many ways, he's a great golf partner. He pays for a lot of rounds. That's always nice. He is a gimme master. He will knock your ball away from the hole and give you the putt many, many times. But the one way in which Goodson is a bad guy, And it reminded me of Keegan Bradley yesterday, is he is not afraid to, like, let's say you got four or five holes left, and you don't know exactly what your score is, because you're trying not to pay attention, but you know you've been playing well. You haven't had a lot of six, sevens, or eights on your card, just a lot of pars and bogeys, not a lot of doubles, maybe even a birdie in there, and you're like, I got a decent score going. My good friend Josh Goodson will be a bad guy and start being like, hey, do you want to know how many shots you need to break? In my case, it's often break 90. Or even sometimes it'll be like, do you know how many shots? You know what you could do to break 85 coming down the stretch here? Which, of course, after he tells you that, is when you start falling apart and not doing the things you needed to do. That was Keegan Bradley yesterday. He's playing some of the best golf of his life, certainly most recently. Through 54 holes, he's just crushing everyone. And then with like five holes to go, things start going bad. And literally, he's so far ahead, you could start thinking, like, Do you even should you even be trying to play regular golf, or should you just be playing safe golf, playing for fives every hole? Because the only way you can lose is if you had sixes and sevens. But that was Keegan Bradley. Finally down the stretch, he knuckled down. We're changing topics in the middle of the thing here now. Now, he knuckled down, hit a ball close to the green, safely got in, and he still won by like three strokes. So, but it was it's always interesting when you see professional golfers looking like average golfers, and that was Keegan Bradley for a short stretch at the end of the Travelers Championship. And finally, like we said, how do the Rockies feel about this past weekend? Because they won their weekend set with the Angels, meaning they took two of the three games.
Introducing L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com. Your solution to combat the negative effects of sitting at a desk. Sitting at a desk 8 hours a day is as harmful as smoking. If you're stuck at a desk all day, you don't need to quit your job. You need to join our Desk to 5K program. No running experience is required. As a doctor of physical therapy, I'll be honored to guide you every step of the way to reach your running and fitness goals. Let's conquer running together and make it enjoyable. Visit L2R, smarter, safer, faster.com and start moving today.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty large black bags.
They won 7-4 on Friday and 4-3 yesterday. But in between, they lost 25-1. That's the second largest negative run differential for a team that won a series in MLB history. The last time it was, the only time it's been more was in 1897, when, of course, we all remember the Louisville Colonels won a series versus Chicago with a minus 23 run differential. Speaking of baseball, keeping it true to the Gold Show and the heat of summer, talking baseball,